Welcome to the Coaching DNA Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wyckoff. I'm also the founder of Kingdom Coaching, my consulting business in which I coach leaders. This is part two of my conversation with Sam Erger. Sam is the volleyball coach at SMU. During part two, we discuss what her culture looks and feels like, planning practice, the challenges going from assistant to head coach, navigating work and family, and much, much more. Sam is a really good leader and coach who has SMU primed to enter the ACC this coming fall. So without further ado, my conversation with Sam Erger.
Let's talk culture. If I came and spent three straight weeks with your team this spring or maybe early next fall, what am I going to feel? What am I going to see and sense spending 3 weeks with SMU volleyball?
Yeah, our mission statement for SMU volleyball is could be boiled down to, we want to offer the best college volleyball experience possible for the team. We define team as the players, obviously, but I'm on the team. You know, my role is different, but I am on this team. My experience matters. Like, a happy coach is a good coach. And my experience matters. Our assistant coach's experience matters. We want to retain staff. So best experience possible for the team being staff, administrators, anybody that has significant touch points, like you're in that definition of team. And that's a really big deal. So we talk about that quite a bit, that we want our people to enjoy their time with us, that, you know, okay, so what does that mean? You know, how do we get people to enjoy it? Well, we probably want to be good people ourselves. We put pennies into that bucket every day. Another thing I think you would realize if you spent time with us is it's very much a learning environment. I would rather they need to understand why we're doing what we're doing. This is so paramount. Before almost every drill we do, we are going to spend a little bit of time. Hey, why do we do this drill? What's the main goal? A lot of coaches I've seen want to be efficient. So they're wanting to get a lot done. And then eventually you've got this like monotony or this like autopilot takeover. And like, do they even know like how this drill is scored? Do they know why we're doing it? Whatever. So don't want that. So you're going to see us talking quite a bit about why are we doing it? What are we trying to get out of it? It opens up this environment for our girl to ask, hey, we tell them all the time, one of our standards that we have 21 of them. We'd go through one a day. It's okay to ask why. It's okay to ask questions. We want you to understand the why of what we're doing so that you're a little more bought in. I want that buy-in. You know, there's nothing we spend our time on that's, worthless, right? There's always a reason we're trying to spend time on it. And I want my girls to understand that. So you'll see that. And you'll see kind of what I just explained. We've got 21 standards, and each day a different player, like at the beginning of practice, is going to read standard number 4. And then they're going to go find some quote to go with it. They'll read the standard, then they'll read their quote, and then they get to ask 2 questions to our players. And this whole exercise takes maybe 5 minutes. But I think you would see in our culture that everybody has a voice. You know, when I hired my associate head and he first came in, he was like, we talk too much. We spend too much time talking. It's driving me crazy. But a year later, he's like, man, I really came around to this. One of the reasons we have good culture is everybody has ownership in this team. They really feel buy-in. Because one of the things he didn't like was at the end of every practice, and he loves it now. So I'm kind of throwing him under the bus. So I hope he doesn't hear this, but he loves it now. And he would say that at the end of every practice, we end with some kind of circle up. And it's like, hey, who stood out to you today and why? Well, when you have 14 people on the team, plus trainers and coaches and whatever, because the team is, you know, anybody that's there, that can take some time. But we put time into it. And the reason is, A, it gives players a chance to praise each other. I only have 2 eyes. I can't see everything. Maybe we go, hey, stood out to you today and why? And everybody's saying, hey, Susie stood out and I didn't see that. Well, now, I mean, that's awesome. I didn't see that, but now I'm like, whoa, Susie must be doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
And not only that, it gives everybody a chance to have a voice and some ownership and be a part of, yeah, I don't want people to just feel like it's military, like show up, do what I say. Yeah. So
yeah,
that that team led is pretty important in our culture.
That's good. So I know some coaches on the extreme here, on the far end, you have the coach who their practice schedule is down to the second. They have an air horn when it's time to switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've talked with one coach in particular, a college basketball coach that I think of that does not have a practice schedule, literally walks
to
the court and like tells his assistants, hey, we might do this. We might do this. Where do you land on that?
I'm in the middle. We plan everything. But that time is planned. So, okay, 5 minutes at the beginning is planned. It's, you know, Susie's got standard number five today. She gets her 5 minutes. She's leading it. And at first, when we first started doing this, like the coaches did it the first few times to kind of show them, hey, this is what we're looking for. And then when we would ask the question, like, okay, so today's standard was, I'm trying to remember what today's, standard was number five. And I think the question was, the quote that they chose was a Ted Lasso quote. And it was like, hey, if you love what you do, you should work hard. You know, like your work ethic should match that. Some kind of Ted Lasso quote. And then she asked some questions. Well, when we first did that and we asked the questions, like crickets, the girls weren't really responding. But again, back to like this part of my culture philosophy, now we put it on them. Hey, you're the one asking the questions and finding the quote. Oh, all of a sudden there's all this engagement because they're doing it. It's their quote. They found it. Right. And so that engagement from your team is really important, but we schedule that. I land in the middle. We plan all of our practices are on a whiteboard. We plan it, but we even schedule that circle up at the end. Hey, we're going to spend 10 minutes on who stood out to you today and why. Filling today, the circle up at the very end was who on this team or that, you know, makes people around them better, because the mark of a great player is you're not just good, but you make people around you better. So who on our team lands in that bucket? And we spend about 10 minutes letting them call each other out. But another reason why that's so helpful for culture is because now instead of leaving practice with, I'm sure I was a player too, you know, so there's some kids that maybe had a bad day and they're leaving and the rest of the day, they feel like crap. Oh, but if that in that circle up, their name gets called out, now they're leaving going, okay, like, people recognize me. They see me. I'm helping people. You know, it gets your team leaving feeling good.
So let's say you guys are doing a drill and you gave me a picture of like probably a learning environment. Well, for sure, a learning environment. You guys are doing a drill and the drill's not going well. Are you like, hey, the schedule says we have to move on? Or are you
no. Like- oh, we'll stop and we'll. So, yeah, I think there's you plan the day, but I stop all the time. Like, hey, this is not what we're looking for. We need to, you will rise to the standard that you set. People want to meet expectations and you will definitely fall to what you allow. So we stop all the time.
Yeah. And this idea, and I'm just going to use I think you, what were they? The 21 values, the
21 standards. Yeah.
21 standards. And then you guys do your exercise at the beginning of practice. Where did you learn that? Did you come up with that at Hill? Did you pull from different people?
Actually, that came from, you said you're going to ask this question at the end, but I don't actually, when you do ask this, I'll maybe answer it a little more longer, but long form, but I don't read and ingest a ton because I've got three kids. I'm 34. I'm busy. My day is 5 a.m. to like 8:30 p.m. And I'm just at this place in life where I don't have that luxury. Like if I want to be a good mom and a good coach, like that's about what I have time for.
Yeah.
And, but I love the book Excellence Wins. It was recommended to me. I'm probably only going to read something that's highly recommended because I don't have time to go explore stuff. Like it needs to be, I know that I'm going to get some bang from it. And it's a Ritz-Carlton book and Ritz-Carlton operates with this set of standards. And that you're not always going to meet it. Like these are like the ideals. Ideally, this is who we are. This is what we're trying and striving to be. And I thought that was so good. I just, again, like I said earlier, I'm like, I don't care if Texas is serving well, let's go figure it out. And let's do that. If this is what gets the best hotel chain in the world to be known for being great, then we're going to do that too. And so I loved that. That was really good. We took it from that. And yeah, it's a great book. Highly recommend.
Love it. Okay, let's talk staff development, staff leadership. And I'll just start kind of with a low hanging fruit question. What do rhythms look like in a week? Are you guys meeting as a staff every day? Is it organic? Is it structured? What does that look like?
So I really, I don't love meetings. I don't know. We have formal staff meetings every now and then, maybe twice a semester. And I come from an environment at Baylor where it was every Monday. And that's like a 2-hour meeting. And I've seen both work well.
Yeah.
So I'm not dogging on either one. I don't love meetings because back to like, I truly have so much on my plate with trying to be a great mom to three littles and be a great head coach and do both well. I don't want to have to sacrifice, but I know my finite time limitations. And so, hey, meetings is not some, I don't have a lot of time for them. So we really over communicate in over the phone via text. We will have formal staff meetings when the need arises. But if it can be done via email and via text, I'm not doing a meeting. So we also meet quite a bit if we meet about like opponents, things like that. That's going to be on the road while we're on the bus, while we're at the hotel. Because during the week, I mean, people have lives to live. And my top assistant's got 4 kids as well. So it's like, we're pretty busy. So no, we don't have this like, hey, my DOps, she's great. We have a standing 2-week meeting, but she has to come up with the itinerary, print it out, come to me. And we start knocking things off the list, and that it is more efficient to meet one-on-one in person with her. But, and maybe I'll evolve as I get older and have more time for that. But right now, if it can be a text or an email or a phone call, for sure, that's how we're doing it.
Yeah. So, practice schedule, you have in your mind what you're thinking, you email that out. What do you guys want? What do you guys think? Is that how that rolls?
Yeah. So actually our practices are pretty redundant. Variety matters. You don't want kids to get bored. Monotony is, but we have a cachet of maybe 10 drills. That's what we're doing. And our kids are going to, I think you want your kids to be successful. And when it's a new thing every single day, they're going to spend the day just kind of learning the parameters of the drill. So I could just throw out some matrix, correction exchange, 55s. All my kids would know how to go, okay, we're doing 55s. Boom. They're jumping in. They know how to do it. We've done this a million times. They could do it in their sleep. Now there might be, okay, today in matrix, we want to set our middles. And that maybe is the like wrinkle for the day or something like that. But we are pretty, like they know our drills and I want them to be successful. So they don't have to think about how does this drill work again? No, they know how the drill works. Now they're trying to become a better volleyball player within that drill. But my top assistant put the practice on the board, but him and I are going to talk via text after every practice or the day before, like, hey, this is what I thought about practice. Tomorrow we need this week's super defensive focus, carve out 40 minutes for me at 11 a.m. And I've got what I'm doing. I'll put it up. So him and I haven't really figured that out, but yeah, he puts it on the board and I'm plugging in where I want to plug in.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk from your time at Baylor to SMU. What was the biggest challenge transitioning from a longtime assistant to all of a sudden? I know you were a head coach at Hill, but longtime assistant,
sure.
All of a sudden now you're at an AAC school, Division I. Yeah, what was the biggest challenges for you?
So I tell this story a lot, but it's true. When I became a coach, I think in the first month of becoming a coach at Hill, I called my old college coach and I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, for what? Like what? No, she's like, for what? I'm like, for everything. Like she laughed at me, but like the same thing happened with my transition from Baylor to SMU. It's like the first time I ran into Ryan, God bless him, he's a saint, he's such a great coach. But it's like, hey, I'm sorry. And he's like, for what? I'm like, everything. Like I would be such a better assistant now. And of course, experience is what you get right after you need it. So, but there's so much that you learn and I'm still learning because I'm still young in my, you know, Division I head coaching career going into year 3, but I would say there's a lot. If you can work on your decision-making skills before you become a head coach, that will really bode well for you. Because when you become a head coach, I mean, so many decisions flying at you, and they all matter. Every single one is important, and there's a lot, and you want to be good at that and do it well. And so decision fatigue is real. You don't want to let that set in, but you want to be measured and not fly by the seat of your pants. That was a big deal. Year one, just trying to make the right decisions when there's so much stuff coming across your plate. Another big thing is just you want to win friends, and you want people to enjoy from all areas, right? You want your academic coach to like enjoy working for you and get people on your side. And so that's a big deal when you're making that jump, because you're used to being an assistant that's just kind of like following orders in some way, like you're getting things done. And it's not really your job to get people bought in and enjoying it. You're kind of just executing on things. And as a head coach, it's now your job to get the execution to happen, but for it to happen with like a, you know, a happy heart, and for people to, for the culture to be good. You are now the culture buck stops with you, and that's different. And it's hard.
Yeah. So I'm going to stay on this theme. What are some areas you were better year two than you were year one? It sounds like decision-making probably improved. What else?
I mean, naturally, just from year one to two, the rhythms, you're starting to glean into those rhythms getting better. And I remember there's just so much to do. It really is a lot. And so I think you really want to have that skill set of tackling the big rocks. But you've one thing that I think I am good at, that our staff, I've had to have this conversation with them a few times. They'll say, people would say things like, well, this is how we did it last year. What do you mean you want to change? I'm like, hey, get comfortable with change. We are always, yes, that is how we did it. But I wanted let's address that. Can we make it better? If it can't be made better, then great. Let's keep doing it. But if we can make it better, then this is the better way to do it. So in year two, we want to, hey, this is how we did it. Let's tweak it slightly so that it can be a little better. And so at the end of every season, we're going to do like an internal review. Like I asked my players, hey, what did we do well? What did we not do well? And one of the things they said after year one was the schedule, like, was a little, they felt like, hey, they didn't quite know what was going on. And honestly, that for sure, like we were trying to figure out, hey, what's the best way to do game day, for example? Like, should we eat at this time or that time or whatnot? And if you're a seasoned coach of 20 years, I think people take for granted, like if I'm an AD in the hiring process, that's a real thing at the upper levels of like why people want to go hire head coaches, because they have all those processes in place.
Yeah.
It's a well-oiled machine. They know exactly how they want to do it. Well, I didn't have all that. And I had what worked at Baylor for sure. And so we replicated a lot of that, but that was feedback from our players. And in year two, okay, let's address, I'm glad I asked for that feedback because we addressed all that. Okay, let's be a little more regimented so that our girls know exactly what's coming, et cetera. So we got better at that moving into year two and three.
Love it. How do you give us insight into how you navigate soon to be Power Five head volleyball coach and wife and mom, because just one of those is crazy. Two of them. How do you, I'd love to hear you riff on that.
Oh yeah. It's a lot for sure. I think everybody needs to understand that time is finite and you can't do it all. It is such a lie that, oh, like this is commonly thrown at women, but like you can do it all. Like, no, you can't. Nobody can. And a woman, man, no, you can't. So you need to choose your big rocks. And so, and then everything else, you got to find a team or figure it out or find a way to mitigate. So for example, when I was at Baylor and I had young infants, we moved really close to the school, walking distance to work, so I could go and nurse them and things like that. And like, that was one of the things I did. And I had to sacrifice for a while living in the suburbs and where I want, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now, obviously as a head coach, making a little more money, I am truly only mom, wife, coach. I don't cook any of our meals. I mean, I'm getting real like practical with you here, but like,
love it.
I don't do the laundry. I don't cook. We pay someone to do all that. And we It's a lot of money. And but I couldn't do it otherwise because you cannot do it all.
Yeah.
So there's that. I have an amazing spouse partner that I think if you want to coach, and this probably goes for a lot of careers, not every career, but like, man, like really viewing it as, hey, I'm here to like make this community better. This is like a part of my life. Mm. And he's bought into that. Like SMU is a part of his life too. So it's not, so it doesn't feel so like, oh, drudgery or she's gone and now we can't live life when she's gone. Like, no, like they come to games, you know, we go to the basketball games. Like my kids come up there and it's, we're viewing athletics as this is the community that we're in right now as SMU. And like, okay, so let's make it fun. And this is where we're going to spend a lot of time. And so I think that mindset is important. I probably got that from my dad with like, you know, the small town, like, hey, yeah, I'm spending a lot of time here. It looks like I'm pulling an 80, 90 hour work week, but this is like kind of our life. Yep. And this is where my kids are going to grow up and spend time. And that's a good thing. We are bought into not only this being our jobs, but to like bettering this community. And I think with that mindset, it's a little more doable.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks for sharing that. I actually appreciate you getting in the weeds because I mean, it's helpful to get a picture of how does somebody juggle two mat balls.
Yeah. If there's some female listening to this or that comes to, like, I get this question a lot and I'm like, okay, number one, you can't do it all. Like, don't buy into that lie because you'll just completely fail. You'll burn yourself out and it'll be miserable and you'll hate it. So you've got to find a way and sacrifices do have to be made. Like, again, you can do it all. No, you can do it all. If you choose your yeses or nos elsewhere.
Yep.
So you better be willing to sacrifice and choose that this is what I want out of my life. And this is what I want out of my life. But if I was trying to do all this other stuff, then I'd probably hate my life. So that's what I spend my time on. I coach volleyball and I'm a mom and my husband bought into our lives together here. Okay. So
yeah, that's good. Okay. Want to hit on recruiting just for a second. I'm curious as you're going out to watch, you know, to go recruit. Aside from the physical stuff, way more on the character side, when you're watching, what are the non-negotiables? What are the things that you're looking for that if obviously they have to
pull? I love this question. It's so good. So this is a big deal. First and foremost, if any recruits are listening to this, that this is the truth. I'm a very straightforward person. Like the physical athleticism is the number one. Like that's the first thing we're looking at. After we decide like, hey, this kid can do it, because there's a lot of kids that can do it, then these things are very important, but that does come first. There's five things I'm looking for. Number one, exceptional teammate, not just good teammate, like exceptional teammate is really important because we want to have a great culture. I'm sitting here promising kids like, hey, best college volleyball experience ever, like we talked about earlier. So if you come into a team of a bunch of crappy teammates, probably not going to be able to fulfill on that. So it's a big deal. I'm going to ask and I tell recruits this, like, I'm kind of acting like you're a recruit here. Like, I'm going to ask your coaches, like, describe her as a teammate. Yeah. Does she have friends on the team, etc.? So exceptional teammate for sure. Competitive as all get out. You better be a competitor and not, it sounds a little cliche, but honestly, not everybody does look for that. Like, I think we truly attract people who are like-minded, and I'm very competitive. That needed to be one of my advantages because I wasn't the most physical. I wasn't the most just naturally gifted. So I needed that edge. I'm very competitive. And so I attract kids that are like that. And I look for that. Not everybody, there's a lot of gifted kids that are ho-hum. That's not for me. That's not for us. We need the ones that are like obviously competitive. That's easy to see, but looking for that.
Hold on, let me interrupt real quick. When you say it's easy to see, like what are some telltale signs of somebody that's competitive with somebody that's not?
I mean, competitive is most ready most often. Like if you're out there and you have no idea what's going on, you don't know the score, you're not ahead of the play, like you're not competitive. Don't tell me you're competitive. If people are competitive, they're out in front of things. Like they're, you know, just even in life, like, you know, look at the way people operate in life. Like are they... There's people that are ho-hum and just kind of let things happen. And then there's the person that's like trying to live in the best neighborhood, get the best deal, find the best house. Like what? Those are your competitors. Like So, you know, I'm watching kids that are like, you know, out trying to like enforce their will on the situation. And I think it's, to me, I think it's easy to see. You'll talk to people and you'll figure it out. But for sure, most ready, most often. Like, are they aware of what's going on?
That's good.
It drives me nuts when kids aren't aware of what's going on. Like, how can you win if you don't even know what's happening?
Yeah.
So excellent, exceptional teammate, competitive as heck, hard worker. They're competitive and hard worker, not one in the same. If you are competitive and not a hard worker, you're probably what we call a gamer. Well, that's not going to work in college because you are going to play, you're going to practice like 3 to 4x the amount of games you play. So, you know, gamers are great, but like, it doesn't really, like, you need to be both. And we'll figure out if you're a hard worker. Hey, coaches will describe it, et cetera. You can go watch practice. And not every kid is a hard worker. And you do need that because you've got to be a learner. So that's the next one. Learners. Do they have a motor? You can be super physical and not have that internal motor or that like aptitude for learning. And at the collegiate level, when those physicality, the margins become smaller, the learners definitely advance. So that's a big deal. And then last, I look for kids that want to play professionally beyond college.
Hmm.
I really don't want, we definitely preach like best college volleyball experience ever. But if that's all you're about, then when you show up, you've made it. You're here. And now you're a little less motivated. But if you want to go above and beyond SMU and go play overseas, or now there's pro leagues here in the States, I'm probably going to get more out of you, honestly. And so at this point, that's kids I'm recruiting. Those five things.
Yeah, love it. Thanks for walking me through that. Okay, I end with three questions. The first one is, what are you currently reading? I already got an insight to that. You read Horace Schultz's Excellence Wins. Do you are you a podcaster?
So a little bit, but my answer might be different. And I hope people, this is real. This is the truth. Again, back to like, I am 34. I've got 7, 4, and 2, and I'm a coach. You cannot do it all. I am not in a place in life where I'm like hitting a book a week, right? Or I just don't have that time, and I would not want anyone to look at me and think that, oh, I have some kind of standard that is unachievable. I faith is a big part of my life, church every Sunday, and I take a lot of tidbits. My pastor doesn't even know this, but tidbits from his sermons. Like, he just had one where he was telling us, like, beliefs drive behavior. And I took that over and I shared that with my team. I thought that was really good. So I don't have a lot of time to read a ton, honestly, and I'm not ingesting a ton of podcasts, but that book is awesome. Highly recommend, but I'm maybe reading a book, two books a year right now. I just don't have time. Yeah. I'm 5 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. every night. And that's okay. So women out there, or men, whoever, like, you can only do so much. I'm at a stage in life where I'm pretty strapped for time.
Yeah. Gotcha. Second question I always ask is, what advice would you give a young female just getting into the coaching profession?
Man, over deliver. This is any kid, anybody, any job. Coaching does not matter. I just hired a former player. Her interview was her time with me as a player. I didn't interview her. I mean, I wanted her, and she's a great person, amazing, high character, high value system. Her interview was her time with us. Over deliver on whatever your role is. When people say, oh, I can't get into, I don't believe it. You just got to go over. So go work camps, anywhere you can be of help, go be of help, and then over deliver doing that, doors are going to open.
Love it. And I end with this question. Who would you like to hear walk through their journey, hear about how they build culture, all those questions I ask?
Yeah.
You'd like to hear?
Yeah, I think Danny Kelly, DBK at Louisville is really good. I've heard her talk. I'd love to hear more. Right now, I'm really interested in Jarrett at Texas for the reason Jarrett Elliott, and probably a lot of people, right? Because he's winning national championships. But what I'm interested in is where I hope volleyball is going is he's at this place where he's highly resourced, which is awesome. And I think his job, maybe, I'd love to hear, might be slightly different than some others in that he's maybe more of a CEO, kind of with a ton of moving parts and a ton of resources. And I hope I can get to that point and I want to do it well. He's clearly doing it really well. Like this huge organization of people under him. And I'd love to hear him speak on like just managing that successfully. Cause I'm in that place moving into Power Five where I have more resources and people working under me and at my disposal. And I want to make the most of it and do it really well. And so he's someone that comes to mind that's doing that really well. And I'd love to hear him talk. I mean, specifically on that, but yeah.
Love it. Love it. Well, Sam, thanks for your time. Your sister speaks really highly of you. I've had a great chance to get to know her. Awesome stuff. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, she's the best. She's the coach in the family. She's the one. So I'm sad to say I haven't actually listened to hers, but I get to talk with her every day. That's why. Yeah. But
she's good.
She's the best one.